Today, we're deep diving into my personal life. I mean, really deep diving. And the overarching theme of this episode is friendship. I know how intimidating it can feel to make friends as a young adult or just an adult, period. I mean, you can't just go up to someone and be like, do you want to be my friend? And then bam, you have a new best friend like you did when you were five, right? And then you have to throw into the mix finding friends that at least share your core values enough that they won't judge you or abandon you. What if I told you that there's a two-day event that makes all of this possible? It's Turning Point USA's Young Women's Leadership Summit in Dallas, Texas. It's happening June 2nd to the 4th, and it features some of the biggest, boldest, and most exciting speakers in the conservative movement discussing everything that it means to be a woman with conservative women from all over the country. People exactly like you from all 50 states with the same interests. Make lifelong friends, feel encouraged and educated to take back this country, and experience the most incredible event production value in the conservative movement. And I am telling you that as someone who works in politics, there is no event that comes close. What are you waiting for? Text your conservative friends to get tickets. Whether you're a student or a working gal, this event is for you. Go to tpusa.com/YWLS and use code POPLITICS to get 50% off your tickets. I'll see you there. On New Year's Eve of 2016, when I was living in Indianapolis, I was squished into an Uber with a bunch of my then-boyfriend's friends on my way out to ring in the new year when I got an interesting email. Normally, people, when they've been pre-gaming, are not checking their email in an Uber on their way out to celebrate New Year's Eve, but you haven't met me. I never turn work off. So this was when I was co-hosting a morning show on the radio, and it was from a girl who said that she loved my show and she was new to the area and wanted advice from me, someone who happened to also be new to the area at the time, on making friends as an adult. Tipsy me responded, and I ignored her asking for advice. I just said, hey, how about we meet up for a friend day? Here's my number. And the rest is history. We started hanging out almost every weekend, watching The Bachelor together on Monday nights, and I even set her up with the best friend of the guy who I was dating at the time. Long story short, but they got married. She's my third friend that I've set up who's gotten married, by the way. But over the course of our friendship these last 5 years, she's truly become the number one closest person in my life, and she's also seen me go through multiple serious relationships and also some not so serious ones. We've been through it all. Crazy nights out, professional career drama, and even me moving across the country. She is the only person on the planet that I have shared literally everything with about my life and knows me better than absolutely anyone. She's never been afraid to call me out for my flaws in relationships or otherwise, and that isn't changing now. I asked Cuteservatives to send in questions that only my best friend could answer about me. Here to give the dirt on me, answer questions sent in by you, share things about me that I probably would never share myself, and to talk about friendship and finding true friends as an adult is my best redheaded friend, Lauren Kint, on The Spillover. When you emailed me and you were expecting advice, but then I emailed you back and I just said, want to go out for a girlfriend lunch with me? Were you shocked? What was your impression?
My impression or what I thought?
Both. All of it.
Both. Well, I was surprised because you didn't know me. I could have been a murderer for all you knew.
True.
Luckily for you, I wasn't.
Many times in my life I have said, let's meet up, and they might have actually been a murderer.
True. And then my first impression of you when I met you? Spaz.
Okay, let's have a truth moment here. A Bible moment, as the Kardashians would say. Did you like me when you first met me or no?
Yes.
You did?
Yes.
Because I didn't know if I liked you.
Oh, thanks. Rude.
It wasn't that I didn't. I liked you, but I didn't know that if we had clicked, like, we would be as close as we are. And I just thought maybe we were too different because you are... just personality-wise, I don't know how to explain it. You're more, definitely a little bit more introverted when you first meet somebody, but there was just some things I just thought maybe I'd be too much for you, but it's funny because I think one of the reasons that we ended up being such close of friends is because of those differences.
Yeah.
That I am a lot more than you. But
oh, yeah.
We balance each other out. You keep me in check.
I do.
Yeah. So
It's a job that I don't get paid enough for.
That's for sure. She helps me with everything. Lauren helps me with the Cute Servitus Facebook group. She pretty much runs my life behind the scenes that I don't think she gets enough credit for. So, okay. I think it's important that we start with basically the first major relationship drama that I ended up going through after meeting you, which was this guy that at the time I had named the Carpenter. And so one thing you have to understand is that if you didn't follow me or you're not familiar with me before doing Poplitics and the Spillover with Turning Point USA, is I was a morning show co-host in pop radio. And so every morning I would come on and I would talk about my personal life and guys that I was dating and different things like that. But you can't just talk about somebody and talk crap about them with their real name. You got to be respectful when you're calling them out, right? So I would come up with weird nicknames based on their characteristics. And there was a guy that I started dating and he like did woodworking and stuff. So we nicknamed him the Carpenter. And I'm going to tell the story of the Carpenter and like what happened, why we broke up. And then I'll just let you react and tell your side of things from the outside of you dealing with the fallout, which was a lot.
It was my, what's the word I'm looking for? My initiation into Alex.
Well, it was her initiation into me, but also the thing is that I set her up. This guy is still in our freaking lives because I was the dumbass that set her up with his best friend. So this guy, the Carpenter, is still in my life to this day because he's her husband's best friend. So I set her up with his friend. I'm dating this guy. And literally after I set them up, like a week.
It was a week.
I thought it was a month.
1 week.
Okay. See, one other thing is Lauren is my memory. I don't remember anything and I have the worst memory and Lauren always tells me things that I forget. So we break up and what's crazy is he was several years older than me, like 7 years or something. And he was a cancer survivor. He had Hodgkin's lymphoma and survived it. And so he went through chemotherapy and all this stuff. And so one night he calls me out of the blue. And we've been dating for a few months. I was head over heels in love with him. It was just one of those things. Now looking back, I'm like, I don't understand why. But he was the first guy that I started dating after I moved to Indianapolis. I totally fell for him. I met his family. I went home with him for Thanksgiving, all these different things. He met my family. We had said, I love you and all these things. In my mind, it was pretty serious. He acted like it was very serious. So when he called me out of the blue to say, I need to tell you something and I really need you to think about it, take some time and tell me if you want to be with me, this was the last thing I was expecting. So he brings up, you know, hey, you remember that I had cancer and all this? And I'm like, of course. And he says, because of the chemotherapy that I went through, there is a very high chance that I will be sterile and that I'm not going to be able to have kids one day. And he was like, and you know, you're so young and you have your whole life ahead of you. And I know how important it is to you to be a mom. And so I really want you to think about if you would want to date me or not, because if we were to get married, there's a good chance that we'll never be able to have children. That was a bomb that was dropped on me because he's right. It is the number one most important thing to me that I look forward to. And so it was really hard. And we hung up and I thought about it. And I think I called you. Did I call you then? Or no?
No.
We weren't close enough for me to call you yet?
No.
Okay. So I hadn't called Lauren yet. I must have called my other friend, some other best friends of mine. I remember calling my mom and just talking about it and just saying, you know, is this something that you should compromise on or that I should compromise on? And they all said, look, when you marry somebody, you never know what they're going to go through or end up, you know, going through. Like Lauren went through having fertility and you and your husband went through, having to do IVF and things like that. Like you never know when you marry someone what that part of your life is going to look like. So to me, I'm like, okay, well, some people get married and you find out you can't have kids. I just happen to know beforehand that we may not be able to. But if you love somebody enough, shouldn't you be willing to kind of go through that? And so I called him back probably within 45 minutes to an hour. And I said, I'm willing to do it. Like, I love you. So I'm willing to be with you. His demeanor, and you know him. Mm-hmm. So like his demeanor completely changed. It wasn't like, oh, great. You know, a relief. Like you still want to be with me. No. His reaction was, oh, well, I have a lot to think about now. So I'm going to have to get back with you. Takes a few days. Doesn't talk to me. I'm in a spiral. I'm just absolutely devastated. He comes over to my apartment, ends up telling me he loves me, but he's not in love with me. And in so many words, basically that I don't want to go camping or like outside things. And he just doesn't think our lifestyles are going to work out. And long story short, I'm like pretty sure he's breaking up with me because or he was using the fertility stuff as an excuse to break up with me. He was trying to get me to break up with him so he wouldn't have to do it. Essentially, he was like taking the coward's way out. Right. And so he tells me, for some reason, I don't know why, but he was like, well, I'll go to the fertility clinic and, you know, I'll get a test to show how like strong my swimmers are. So this guy who's already told me he doesn't want to end up with me goes to, you know, allegedly, I don't know, maybe he never went. He goes to the fertility clinic, gets tested, tells me that he is above average swimmers. And, you know, he's not going to have any problems actually with his, what do you call that from a guy's perspective? Not fertility, but I don't know, whatever. He wasn't going to have any issues having a kid anyway. They told me it was like an anomaly, or they told him it was an anomaly for somebody that's gone through chemotherapy, how good he was down there.
His count was high.
Yeah, his count was high, whatever. He had Michael Phelps down there. So we break up, whatever. Then I think that's when I really started reaching out to you, yeah, because I was dealing with this breakup. Now he was really, him and his friends were the only people I had, and you were the only person I'd met outside of that friend group. And I was like, oh great, now I have no one now. Right. And you were still in that group and being around him.
Aaron and I only been dating for a week. We've gone on like 2 days.
So now you're in the middle of this drama, like you and Aaron, your husband now, are in between these two friends who had just broken up. And so what was your whole perspective of the whole thing? I mean, am I just like a horrible picker when it comes to guys?
You're not a horrible picker. But I think in the past, and I'm not going to speak for right now, but in the past in relationships, you have kind of tried to rationalize different things that deserve no rationalization, like things that this guy does not want to be with you. There's every single sign in your face. This guy does not want to be with you. And I think you used to have a really hard time accepting that because you thought that it was like something you did wrong. And now that we know the carpenter,
we know it was definitely not an issue with me.
There's not, and I'm not saying anything like horrible about him, but
He has a track record. He has a pattern. He finds a problem with every girl he dates a lot. Exactly like clockwork, after 3 months, pretty much. He has, you know, her toenails too big or whatever. He'll come up with something and break up with them for any reason. And mine was, I didn't want to go camping. And that I had said my dream car was a Range Rover. And for some reason, that was just unbelievable to him.
Right. You very much offended him by the
which I said, does it matter if I'm paying for it? I should be able to drive whatever freaking car I want. I don't understand why this matters. Like, if I'm paying for it, I'm not asking you, why do you care? And this was just, he still brings it up when we're around, because we have to hang out with each other because of Lauren and Aaron. And every single time we're around each other, he goes, remember when you said that you wanted to have a Range Rover? I'm like, yeah, I do. And I still do. And I don't understand why we're still bringing this up. Like, he cannot let it go.
Well, that breakup was interesting because I didn't really know you. I did not know you.
So did you think I was crazy?
I didn't think you were crazy. I didn't know you. I didn't know Aaron. I didn't know the carpenter, like when all that happened. And so I was just, but in the whole scheme of things, since I had only gone on 2 dates with this guy, I was like really trying to be there for you because I felt so bad. Like you were kind of a hysterical mess.
Really? What do you remember from that
time? You hysterically cried on air. Like, yes, when you told your story.
Oh, yeah. Well, let me just tell you, that wasn't the first time. I cried during my 3 years in Indianapolis on the air. I think I hysterically cried over boyfriends multiple times.
Right. But that was the first one that had happened there that I heard.
Yeah. Well, and the next one, I broke up with him on air, essentially, and was crying hysterically. So, you know.
Yeah. So I was just trying to, like, help you feel better. But I didn't think you were crazy. I thought that the amount of depression you were going through was kind of a lot for a guy that you'd only been dating for a few months. But
she keeps it real with me.
But he did tell you that he loved you and then he took it back.
That's true.
And I think that is, why do guys do that? Like, it's so...
It's happened. No, but the other thing is, not only why do guys do that, but for some reason, it happens to me constantly.
It happens to you constantly.
Like every other guy I've dated, this happens to. It happened to me more than once. It happened to me recently.
It has happened to you. Since I've known you, it's happened to you 3 times.
Yeah.
3 times. And that was the first. So I thought it was a little dramatic. But then again, I understood. Because, like, he told you that he loved you. And then he said, never mind, I'm going to take that back.
Who is your least favorite boyfriend that I've had since you've known me?
The Egyptian.
Why?
You know why.
Okay, we have to give a background on the Egyptian. So the Egyptian was another guy that I dated in Indianapolis. We dated for almost
a year.
A year. Yep. Yeah. Well, it ended up dragging out to a year and a half. It was definitely, I think, in my life, it was the hardest breakup I've ever gone through. It was the longest lingering breakup that I've ever gone through. Just that whole thing put me into like a spiraling depression right before it ended. Like while I was still dating him, I was like, I think honestly, and I've never ever shared this publicly, I think that that was the first time in my life that I ever was like in a dangerously dark place, like dark thoughts, dark place, like was how miserable I was just with everything in general.
Yeah. That was the worst you've ever been.
And so that whole thing was, I literally went on vacation with this dude's family, okay? We went to Mexico together, me and his whole family. And his dad tells me on the vacation, you love my son more than he loves you. And so from that moment forward, for the next like 2 months, I was questioning the son. I was just like, are you sure that you really love me? You know, all this. Well, your dad doesn't, you know, your dad says that you don't. And that's super concerning. And so we were fighting. I've never fought with a boyfriend as much as I did with him. It was constant. It was so bad. Just screaming, yelling, calling each other names, like really bad, like super toxic. And
all the time.
So I broke up with him, though,
on Valentine's Day
on the radio. I break up with him on the radio. I'm sobbing, screaming. I'm laying out all of our dirty laundry. It's like 14 minutes straight of just airing every single private thing about our relationship. He got mad at me for this. He said this to me. You know, it was in hindsight, not my finest moment. Almost all of that I should have kept private. But it was almost like.
It was cathartic.
I had been holding all of this in for so long. And so we turned that mic on and my co-host had asked me, how was your Valentine's? It was the day after Valentine's Day is what it was. He said, how was your Valentine's Day last night? And I burst into tears. And my co-host had no idea.
Nobody had any idea.
No, I didn't even tell you.
No, you did.
I did.
You texted me. I was on my way home from dinner on Valentine's Day, having a great Valentine's Day. And you texted me and told me and I was like, oh my gosh. Alex and the Egyptian broke up.
So you knowing what we had been going through in our relationship and stuff, did me announcing our breakup surprise you or no?
Announcing it on air?
No, to you.
To me.
When I told you.
Yes and no.
I remember another thing that led to one of our fights leading up to that, which was like my last straw, which this is probably stupid, but I asked him for Valentine's Day if he would please go to a Pure Bar class with me. It was like, bring your boyfriend to Pure Bar. And he said no. He refused. This is the thing, though. It wasn't just that. Every date that I asked, can we go ice skating? Can we go pumpkin patch picking? Whatever. I don't know. You know, the girly, stupid Instagram stuff.
He said no to everything.
He said no to every single thing. I could not get this guy to do anything with me unless it was something he wanted to do with his friends.
With his friends. I never saw you. I mean, I saw you, but I saw you and I, the whole time you guys dated, I saw you just one-on-one, but not as much as before him. You missed my wedding night party. Remember my wedding night? We went out after my wedding. We went to the Rathskeller for live music, and you missed that because you were with him.
Oh,
because
gosh.
You had
now I feel
his
horrible.
Friend's birthday.
Oh, gosh, I feel horrible. I'm like, we're really airing out all my dirty laundry. Like now it's being revealed that I'm a horrible friend.
You're not a horrible friend, but that's just like what he did to you. And that was why not you missing my wedding was not why I couldn't stand him. I couldn't stand him because.
I mean, by the way, wait, I think it's important to say that you didn't missing your wedding. Your wedding was you and your husband and your old parents. That was it. I wasn't allowed at the wedding.
It was the party after.
Yes, a party after.
Yeah.
Because I wouldn't have missed your freaking wedding for my boyfriend's friend's birthday.
No. But between the carpenter and the Egyptian, you were single and dating, like dating off and on for, I don't know, like a year, year and a half, something like that before you met the Egyptian. And during that time, I gave you a lot of advice about how to like handle relationships and things you should kind of like maybe try to do differently. And you did all that with him. Like you had grown a lot and you were mature and you were compromised. The level of compromising that you did for this clown was like ridiculous.
But also, do you think I should tell them the story of how I had met the Egyptian? Because that's kind of a movie in and of itself.
I forgot about that. Yeah, that's interesting.
So this is, you have to settle in for this. This is just so crazy. Okay. When I tell you, okay, I have tried to share this with them so many times, but I'm like, you don't understand radio, Alex. When I tell you that my life was a movie, like my dating life was a movie every weekend, it really was. I have the craziest dating stories with guys. So this guy, the Egyptian, I had been on Bumble for a summer, and I started talking to this guy, not the Egyptian. I started talking to this guy on Bumble for about a month. Really liked him a lot. We had everything in common. He was a great responder. Like, I mean, you know, he wasn't like those boring guys on dating apps where they're just like, hey, sup, what are you doing? What do you do? You know, like so boring. We had great conversation, but for some reason, and he kept asking me to go on a date with him. And for some reason, and I always said yes to anyone, I kept saying no. There was something inside of me that was telling me, don't go out with this guy. And a month later, we had had a mutual friend. And this guy said, hey, you know that guy that you've been talking to on Bumble? And I said, yes. And he said he was murdered. And I was just like, what do you mean? And he said he was at his house and it was such a tragedy. These kids came up, they tried to rob him, and they ended up shooting and killing him. I never met this guy, but I was so affected by his death. And it was weird, and I felt kind of gross for it. Like, why am I so sad over this guy that I've never met? But he was so young. I think he was 26 at the time, and it was such a tragedy because as soon as he died, I mean, this story was crazy all over the news because he was so involved in the community. I can't remember if he coached like a kid's basketball team. He was super involved in his church. He was a very outspoken Christian. And it was just like everyone in the city knew who this guy was. And it was like people just sharing their testimonies of how this kid, because of him, like they ended up getting saved. And his funeral was live streamed. And I remember being at my apartment and watching the funeral service on my phone because I thought, I can't go to a funeral of a guy I never met that I talked to on a dating app. That's so weird. So instead, I like lurked on my phone and watched it. Like, I don't know how that's not even weirder. But I watched it and there were lines of people that were wrapped around this church. Anyway, I say all this to say he had a profound effect on so many members of the community. And so that stuck with me. And he had a side business, like a vintage clothing business that he sold sports memorabilia and sports vintage clothes and stuff. And so his family set up as a memorial to him to cover funeral costs and things, come to this memorial clothing sale or whatever to sell the rest of the stuff from his store. And, you know, the donations will go towards him and all this. So I go and I'm checking out some stuff that I picked out, and his brother, who's younger than me, was like, hey, you're Alex from the radio. Thank you so much for coming. This means so much to our family. Like, you know, my brother had talked about how he really wanted to go out with you. And I just said, what? Like, and he's like, it really means a lot. You know, thank you. And I just got into the car and I just was sobbing. Like, I can't even believe this. So a few months later, I'm at a comedy show. John Crist. I see the brother of the guy that passed away. And
I was with you.
You were?
I was with you at John Crist.
Oh, you're right. Lauren was there.
Yeah.
So this guy's like, Alex, and we waved to each other. That was it. That was the only interaction we have. Okay. 6 months after that, I get a DM. I think it's St. Patrick's Day. I get a DM and this guy says, hey, Alex, random question. Are you still single? And I was like, oh my gosh, you're kidding me. This guy is not hitting on me. Like his brother, like I literally talked to his brother died. And now the other brother's coming, like trying to get with me. I'm like, this is so weird. And I was like, yeah. And I didn't know if he was asking me out. And he goes, oh, well, I have a friend, one of my best friends. I think you guys would hit it off. And I remember what I said. I said, does he love Jesus and does he love Trump? And he said, yes. And then he sent me his picture, the Egyptians. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is one of the hottest guys I've ever seen in my life. Lauren doesn't think so.
No.
I am very.
He's not unattractive.
He's not unattractive. He's not. But I actually have a type, and I never talk about this, but I have a type, which is, I don't know, what do you call that?
Tall, dark, and bearded.
Tall, dark, and bearded. So every guy besides Nick, my current boyfriend, every single guy I've dated, for the most part, pretty much could be brothers.
Yes. They all look alike.
Very, very specific type. So anyway, that's the story of how I met the Egyptian. And so that night, the next morning, he texted me and we hit it off. And so a week later, we went on our first date and it was, you know, a year and a half of tumultuous, nightmarish stuff after that. But the family, the guy that passed away, He was great. I mean, well, I don't know. When I talked to him,
you loved his friends.
Loved his friends. I love the Egyptians' friends. I love this guy's family. You know, everybody else was great. It just wasn't right for him and I. But that is the story of how I met the Egyptian, which is probably one of the craziest dating stories I have.
Probably, yeah. But he was just. I think, and I told you this at the time, I said, Alex, this guy is not ready for a relationship. I'm not telling you that he's like a bad guy.
But why did you think that?
Because he did not know how to communicate. He did not know how to compromise. He did not know how to fight. Like, he hit below the belt every single time. He was very manipulative. You would try to compromise and like, he would not have any of it. It was either like, we're hanging out, we're doing this, and we're doing it with my friends, or we're not doing anything. And it was that every single time. Or even whenever anytime you have like an argument with a boyfriend, you text me and I am like giving you advice of what to say, or, you know, helping you kind of process what's going on. And you would apologize to him. And he, like, there was just no give and take. Like, it was like all your efforts fell flat. And it was unwarranted because you were really, really trying. And I think that he's probably a nice guy and a good guy.
I think he's
at the time he was not ready for a relationship. And I think that I was right in that because he started dating somebody else, but it wasn't like right after you.
No, it was like a year later.
Yeah. So.
And they've been together ever since, which is great. So, I mean, you know.
But for you, he was my least favorite.
What do you ask my boyfriends when you meet them for the first time to determine if there's any red flags? Like, what are the things like a guy has to answer about me to know if they're good for me?
Well, it's funny that you ask that because I have not yet met McPlant.
McPlant is Nick. That's what Lauren calls him because he's a vegetarian.
I will never call him Nick. So I haven't met him. So it's been a long time.
So now you're going to share what you're going to ask him, but he can't listen to this because if he listens, he's going to know the answer.
I'm sharing what I've asked your boyfriends in the past and what that was like my telltale. That was what I went by, which was because at the time you were on the radio. Okay.
Right.
And this girl shared everything.
Like
everything.
Everything.
And so my number one question to them, well, I had two, but my number one question to them would be, how are you okay handling your life being on the radio and maybe sometimes embellished because for the sake of radio? And every single time they said, yes, I have no problem with that.
Every time.
Every time. I have no problem with that. And then they had this like fantastical response that I could see right through. And I'm like, yeah, well, let's give it about a month. Like, let's wait till the first fight because that's when they're going to be like, never mind. Let's rewind.
You asking that, though, kind of reminds me. OK, remember in the Pastor JP episode of The Spillover, how at the end he was talking about like when I do marriage counseling, I always ask them like, you know, would you ever, you know, is there ever a reason that you would pursue divorce? And they always say, no, no way. I love this person. Like, mm-hmm. I'll never divorce them. There could be nothing. And then that's when Pastor JP is like, oh, yeah, well, what if they cheat on you with your brother and then make a music video about it? And they're like, mm-hmm. well, I mean, maybe then. And then Pastor JP is like, well, then, you know, then you need to put that in your vows that I will love you forever till death do us part unless you cheat on me with my brother. And then, you know, you make a music video about it.
Them saying yes. And then as soon as the first fight happens and you talk about it on air.
Yes.
Bye. I'm not okay with this. I want to be private. I don't want you to post our pictures on Instagram. I'm not going to post any pictures on Instagram.
Exactly.
That was what it was. And so that was the question I would always ask. And then my second one is, which you get this answer on your dates. You always ask on a date. Before you even go on a date with somebody, you want to know if they're a Christian or not. So my question to them is always like, are you a Christian? Are you strong in your faith? Are you going to lead her? Because that's what you're looking for, because you'll admit like you are a Christian and you know your beliefs, but you admit that you want a man to lead you in like the right theological direction.
I'm not a spiritual leader type of personality.
No. And you shouldn't. I mean, you know,
well,
the man is really supposed to be the spiritual leader of the house. So, and that's what you want. So I always ask that question. Two. Those are my two probably biggest questions that I ask. And then I just kind of watch their behavior.
Okay, well, let's talk about what I do wrong, because I have worse traits And by the way, everything I'm asking, these are things that have been sent in by cute servitors too. So what they want to know what my worst traits are.
In a relationship? In life, you have the same one.
My worst trait is the same in my life and in my relationships?
Yes. And you know, it is, without a doubt, you are the worst self-sabotager I've ever met in my life.
What does that mean?
You self-sabotage everything. If everything is going really, really well, and you're not, I'll give you credit and say you're not as bad about it now as you used to be, but if everything is like smooth sailing, we're going great, we're getting along, then like one little, oh my gosh, he did not text me for an hour. Is he dumping me? We're breaking up.
And like, then I'll break up with him first so he can't break up with me.
And then you like come up with all these red flags that are not red flags. And then I have to like talk you down. So you're the worst self-sabotager. And you do it in personal life. You do it in your professional life. And you do, I mean, because if you think...
I do it in my professional life?
Yes. If you think that like something isn't good, you're a perfectionist in every sense of the word. So if you're working on something or you put content out and it's not doing well, or if it's not perfect, you're not going to put it out. And if you put something out that you think is perfect, but it's not performing the way that you want it to, then you're like, oh my gosh, is this going to be a disaster? Am I going to get fired?
My producers are in my ear going, yes, yes.
You constantly think that, constantly, like, that any moment you're going to get a call from Charlie and he's going to be like, you're fired. We're ending your contract. So you're like the worst self-sabotager. You are getting better about it. Like, but that's your worst trait, because I think that it like has caused you to have arguments that are could be avoided and are completely unnecessary.
I'm mostly extroverted, but I have a good size introverted sliver, if you will. And it doesn't bother me to stay in on a weekend and read or binge a TV show that I'm really into. I also love, I don't know about you, but I love to run errands alone or go shop by myself. It is just so peaceful. So the other night, I'm having a little me time, and I cooked up one of my Moink ribeyes. I swear to you, it was the best steak I've ever cooked at home myself. I just sprinkled some Himalayan pink salt on it, you know, pink, cracked pepper, onion powder, and garlic salt. Pretty simple, and it was incredible. Moink, that's Moo plus Oink, is a meat subscription box that delivers grass-fed and grass-finished beef and lamb, pastured pork and chicken, and sustainable wild-caught salmon straight to your door. I got ribs in my box, chicken wings, chicken tenders, bacon steak, ground beef, salmon, and tons more. My whole team is fighting me over it. If it sounds like too much food for you, don't worry. You can customize every box so that you get exactly what meat you want. The best part is Moink is helping save rural America by working with small-town farmers all over the country. I love Moink, and I know you will too. Keep America farming by signing up at moinkbox.com/spillover right now, and cute servatives will get free filet mignon for a year. That is 1 year of the best steak you'll ever taste, but for a limited time. That's moinkbox.com/spillover. That's moinkbox.com/spillover. What do you think is a huge misconception people have about me?
Oh my gosh. By and large, that you are a spoiled brat, conceited, mean girl. Like, that, I think, is...
I'm not a mean girl. I thought that I was a mean girl.
I know you thought that because it's written everywhere.
The shade!
I read it all. And I'm here to dispel, because you're not. You are extremely down to earth. You are, like, one of the most compassionate... Like, you are extremely humble and so insecure, like, but also confident. It's like a weird...
What does that mean, insecure and also confident?
You exude confidence. You know what you're good at, and you know what you do well, and you feel good about that. And you know, if you're going to say something, whether it be on this podcast or on Poplitics or on the radio or on your Instagram stories, like, you're going to stand behind that. You do not bow to any mob, even if it is your own mob. And so you're very confident, but you're also, you're a human. So you get insecure. If you read all these negative, horrible comments, a lot of them don't bother you.
Oh, I cried last night.
But I mean, it's
very hard for me to see a bunch of that crap.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes it bothers you more than others. Sometimes I do feel like you get flooded and it's like you don't care. And then other times you get flooded and you're a human and you have emotions and that breaks my heart, because when I read those comments, I get so pissed. Like, I am feel so protective
sometimes
of you.
Lauren gets more mad about crap that I get than I do.
Because it's not true. Because the stuff is not true.
I'll get a mean DM on Instagram and I'll send the screenshot to Lauren. And what's funny is, you know, I'm just expecting her to be like, oh my gosh, they suck, whatever. Like a one-off thing. She will not reply, though, for 25 minutes. But then she'll respond and it'll go bleep, 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 bleep. It'll be like 10 messages. And it's all these screenshots of their Facebook profile, their LinkedIn, all this. Like, look how horrible they are. They suck. They have a loser job. They're like, whatever. Like, don't worry about them. She, like, does a deep dive on them just to make me feel better. Like, that you are, like, my number one bulldog in my life.
Yeah.
Like,
because I know you. And I know that there's not a mean bone in your body. You are so compassionate about... So when Bob Saget happened, people were making comments that you were a pedophile.
Because I said that I didn't think that Bob Saget was a pedophile.
Because he's not.
Right.
It was the most insane, ludicrous comment. This girl cares more about sex trafficked children.
And abused children.
It was like one of the first things that I ever learned about you. It's ridiculous. And so,
like, super passionate about it. Like, that's why I am a CASA volunteer. Like, that's my number one favorite type of true crime genre is crimes against children, because I'm so passionate about it and learning about it and how to. I took a certified class on how to be able to identify abused children and the signs. Yes. Like, it's true. It's like my number one passion point.
Right. So when I see those comments, like, I feel personally attacked. No, I'm not.
Because I'm like your arm. I'm like an extended version of you.
But that's the misconception. I mean, out of what I seek. And I see people say that, like, you just want to be famous. This girl, I'm here to tell everybody, is not that cool. Like, she's pretty. She's not as exciting as you think. She just wants to be a wife and a mom.
And I would give all of this up. You know,
in two seconds.
If I was told tomorrow, hey, you can either choose to have the spillover and it's the number one podcast in the world, or you can be a wife and a mother, I would choose wife and a mother without hesitating.
You have cried. I don't know how many times you have cried because you think that that's never going to happen for you, which it will. But you think that it's not. That's all you want. And so the fact that there are literal clowns running around the internet saying that you want to be famous and that's all you want, it's laughable, and that's like the biggest misconception.
How do I handle insecurity when I'm feeling insecure? How do I deal with it?
Not well. Well, you're getting better. There's a lot of growth happening with Alex. You have a process. You send me a million messages spiraling, like, they kind of just, the first one starts and then the next one is like more intense and then it's spiraling. And then I talk you down. I try to talk you down. Sometimes you retreat. People don't realize this. Alex is pretty introverted. You're pretty introverted. Like, you love being alone. You love to just like sit around and read and take baths, which
understand. When I go to Lauren's house, I'm like, I need to go take a bath or a nap or something, like, because I have to just, I need to recharge.
Yeah, that's how you recharge. You like to be alone. So, and people don't realize that about you. So sometimes whenever you get really insecure and it's like really bad, you kind of retreat to yourself. Not like you're, you know, we should be sending authorities to check on you, but you kind of become quiet, which is normally
like, I don't reach out to you constantly.
Right.
I'll go like, it'll be like, like longer than a day, which Lauren and I, you have to understand, communicate from the moment we wake up to the moment we go to bed all day, every day.
Yeah.
Constant communication. So she knows either if I'm not responding because I'm either working or because something's wrong.
Right.
Usually. Or like maybe I'm distracted because I'm with Nick or something.
But. Right. But I can normally tell when it's something that's wrong because I know your schedule. So I know the difference. Anyway, so you retreat And then you finally will kind of come out of it. And you can always come out stronger and like with a better perspective. But you do go through this process of like thinking the worst, going through all these crazy scenarios of like what could happen, and then like coming back to reality.
What do you think I will be like as a mom, honestly?
I think you're going to be very chaotic.
What?
But I do think...
In a fun way or in like a horrible way?
Oh, no. In a fun way. In a fun way. You will be... But I also think... I think you are going to be different as a mom than you think you're going to be.
What is that? What do I... Okay, what do you think I think I'm going to be like as a mom? And what am I actually going to be like? Your prediction.
I feel like in your mind, you as a parent is like Carnivals and SpongeBob, if I were to give it an aesthetic.
That's me in general.
Right. So I think that's what you think you're going to be like as a mom. But when you have kids, I think you are actually going to be way more of a worrier about those little things that you may think right now you wouldn't care about. Like, I think you might think, oh, I'll put my kids in front of the TV. I think that you're going to be one of those parents that's like, you get 10 minutes.
No, actually, what's interesting is that since in the last 5 years, since we first became friends, I think I've drastically changed what I think I'm going to be like.
When you talk to me about parenting and what you want with your like homeschool, that's you as a parent of school age children. So I'm kind of talking more like,
oh, like little new like
parent,
toddlers.
Like as a new parent, okay. What you're going to be like. And I think that, but I think you're going to be a really great mom. People don't know this. When I had my twins, you stayed with me for a week.
That's true.
And you
did feedings alone.
Alone.
Both twins at midnight.
In the middle of the night. Alex, I still have a very strict schedule. And Alex, to give me time to sleep and give my husband time to sleep, you did the middle of the night feedings and you did them by yourself. And you never once asked for me to come help you, even if you couldn't get them to stop crying.
Look at that.
Like, and they were little. They were little babies.
Newborns.
So
like a month old.
Yeah. And so.
Or actually, they may not even have been a month old.
They were a month. Okay. You came right after White at Billis.
Okay.
But I think you're going to be a great mom. Like, I don't worry about any of that. And I think you're going to, you research all the time too. So like everything that you do is going to be something that you've read 65 different books or reports about before you do it.
Do you think I'm going to be a bridezilla?
No.
You don't?
No. Now, 2 years ago, yes.
What's changed?
I think you're older now, and I think that before you, and which what you wanted before is not ridiculous. It's normal. You wanted like the normal, big to do, like traditional, huge wedding.
And now I think I just want to get married, so I don't care. We'll elope. I'll go to the frickin' 7-Eleven. We'll do it in front of the Slurpees.
Well, now I just think that you realize, I think you realize more that it's
doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter because it's one day and right. It's, you know, my husband and I did not, as you said, we got married, the two of us, our parents, on a rooftop with a pastor. And it was planned, but like we planned for it to be just that because we did. And it was the most perfect day of my life. It was the most
perfect
day.
Besides when you met me.
Sure. It was the most perfect day. It was like perfect from the moment that I got up till the moment I went to bed that night. It was perfect. And it wasn't this big fancy whatever. And I think that, I don't think you're going to be a bridezilla. I think that you've relaxed about it. And I think even if you do have a more of a traditional wedding, I still think that you're going to be more relaxed about it because you realize that it's one day and it's the marriage that matters.
I literally share my location with you, like on our iPhones.
Yes.
So if I deviate in my schedule at all, which we kind of talked about, you know, you text me right away and ask if something's up. I remember one time Isabel Brown made me go on like some kind of hike or something. So I'm like, you know, my location is showing me snake up some mountain or something. And Lauren is
literally
texting
in the middle of nowhere.
Literally, it shows like on iPhone, you know, I'm in the middle of a mountain and Lauren is like, where are you? Are you being trafficked? Like she checks. I mean, which I have to ask you, tracking me and making sure I'm okay is like a full-time job.
Yes. I do not get paid enough. Do you hear me? I do not.
I don't ask you to do that.
You don't. But I worry about you because, as you know, my biggest fears are being kidnapped, raped, and murdered.
Yeah.
And so I'm constantly worried that that's going to happen because you're here and you're not, and you're alone a lot of the time and you weigh 80 pounds. I mean, I could like throw you over my shoulder and stuff you in my car right now. You would like. And so I worry about that. And I also know you're allergic to physical activity. So when I see you in the middle of a desert, I can only assume you're being buried alive.
It's true. I mean, she's got the facts right. Lauren's also a true crime aficionado, just like me. She loves it just as much as I do. She's like the only person that I can, you know, send every super disturbing like movie and TV show and podcast episode to that she won't like judge me for it and think I'm a freak.
I still think you're a freak, but that's not the reason why.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. Am I messy or clean?
I think we all know how that you're disgusting is a better word.
Disgusting.
Your apartment, I can only assume, because I haven't been.
It isn't that bad.
Okay.
It's not that bad. My desk here is gross.
Your desk is an abomination. You are the messiest.
Okay,
adult.
But there's a difference between messy.
You're not dirty.
And dirty.
No. You're not dirty, and your hygiene is like top notch. But you are.
I destroy.
It's like, I mean, my children are neater than you, and they're 10 months old. Like, and they rip. They just like rip things down from the walls with no regard to anything. That you are like that on steroids. You're very messy.
Someone asked, how childish am I in a cute way?
What does that mean?
I don't know. This is what they asked. How childish is she in a cute way?
Okay, so when Alex comes to stay with me in Indiana, I have to put child's juice in my fridge.
I have a juice every day or a Dr. Pepper.
She drinks with straws.
Always.
I have like I even straws. In my, like with my glass... My glassware, you drink with a straw, mm-hmm. if you can. You eat cake for breakfast. And tiramisu and cookies sometimes.
That is breakfast food.
Okay. I mean, you're very, like, all, but, okay, so you're, like, mature emotionally, but you're very childish. You have childish intent. I mean, you still take baths like every day, like
Why
as
is
your
that?
Form
I don't think
of.
That's weird. I take a bath every day because I don't wash my hair every day, and it's the easiest way to clean my body and not get my hair wet.
You're soaking in your own filth.
No, I'm not. That is your own. You have your own personal vendetta against bathing.
I picture baths as like. Lauren, an occasional luxury.
Lauren only takes baths after she takes a shower, which I like. At that point, I'm already clean and I'm ready to get out. I'm hot. And my fingers are already pruny. I don't want to be in there anymore. Okay. What are some of the craziest things we've gotten into as friends?
Probably the night we met Hot Felon.
I'll let you tell this story.
We should have talked about this when you asked if you had a bad picker. Alex and I went... out one night. We went out to a
club. And I'm gonna say club like this because now, like, living in Scottsdale, like, yeah, I know what a club is.
It wasn't,
this is Indianapolis, Indiana, yeah, club. Like, there's more of a party at White Castle, I'll just say that,
right? I trepidatiously say club, but we went there. We went to this place with loud music and red lights, and I'm trying to remember all the specifics. I think you were there because another guy was like interested in you and you had met him and like gone on a date or something.
I don't remember.
And anyway, we get there and you're talking to him. I'm dating Aaron at the time, so I was kind of bored out of my mind, but like just watching you talk to this guy.
Being my bodyguard, my
like
counselor.
I was just sitting there on my phone and you. So you met this guy. He's like talking to you. So you're talking to him all night. He comes up to me and he says, you can go home. I'm going to drive her home tonight. And I look at this guy and I was like, no, you're not.
You're like, the hell you are.
I was like, that's absolutely
and
not
I'm
happening.
And I'm like, woo, he's going to take car.
Like a red car. Yeah, like a sports car. And you were like, oh, I'm just going to let him drive me home. And I was like,
very stupid of me as a true crime connoisseur, yeah. By the way. I'm crying.
And I was like, no, you're not. But I was like, I'll humor these ding dongs for a second. So I asked to see his ID and I took a picture of it.
I thought you fished his ID out of his pocket while we were making out.
I did not do that.
I thought you did. That's how I tell the story every time.
You're telling it wrong. That would be like way more juicy. But no, he willingly gave it to me because I said I was never going to let you go home with him. But I told him.
You're like, sure.
That I was like, give me your ID. And I took a picture of it. And then, you know, time went on. And I was like, I'm still not letting her go home with you. We don't know you. And you seem unsafe. And then you came home with me. And then I did a little quick Google.
A background check.
I did a background check. I played around with this for quite some time because I was like, I'm not paying for this background check. I finally found a free one. He had like 7 charges against him, all these mugshots, like one after the other, after the other, after the other, after the other. And I was like, Alex, you wanted to go home with a criminal.
Right.
Like, you were adamant about going home with a criminal.
So we called him hot felon.
And then she talked about him on the radio. And then his girlfriend
of 2 years, who was an NFL cheerleader with 6-pack abs,
DM'd Alex and was like, I think
you... No, she didn't. She called into the radio.
Oh, I thought she messaged you.
I don't know.
You had her call in.
Yeah. I mean,
she messaged you. And then you had, because you sent me screenshots.
Yeah. She said, what's the hot felon's real name? Because I think he's my boyfriend of 2 years.
Yep. And then you were like, call in.
Yeah. And so her and I went out. We became friends. You went out with me with her. And we're still, we're friends. Like, you know, we talk and stuff. Like, you know, we message.
She's a very cool girl.
Yeah. Very
cool. And they broke up, by the way.
Yeah. And now she's doing way better without him. So anyway, that's the hot fella story. Definitely one of the craziest things we've gotten into as friends. Okay. Here's a good question. What is something that would shock people about me that I probably wouldn't ever be willing to share myself? But I'm giving you the green light to share whatever you want.
That you very much were a launching pad for Crime Junkie.
People right now, I'm very nervous. I've never, ever, 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 ever shared this publicly ever.
I am shaking. I am shaking out of fury and nervousness. But you, when you were on the radio, you came to me and you said, I have an idea to do a show or a segment once a week covering a true crime, a murder. I want to call it Murder Monday. Came to me with that idea. I said, that's incredible. People would love it. You went to a networking event.
It was like a nonprofit fair. So in Indianapolis, there was like this thing at the public library, like all these nonprofits set up a little table and you could walk around and, you know, see if there was a nonprofit that you wanted to get involved in.
Right. And you met Ashley Flowers.
And I met Ashley Flowers.
She was there with Crime Stoppers.
Correct. Because she was a volunteer with Crime Stoppers.
Yes. And you hit it off.
I walked up to her because obviously as a true crime fanatic, I saw, you know, the Crime Stoppers desk and I saw a girl that looked about
our age.
And I was like, oh, cool. You volunteer with Crime Stoppers? Like, that's so neat. Mm-hmm. And so as she's talking to me, I'm like, whoa, like this girl has an incredible voice. I mean, my radio mind went there. And I said to her in the moment, I said, have you ever thought that you have an amazing voice for doing podcasting or radio?
Yeah.
She's like, no. Well, actually, I've never thought of that.
Yeah. So you started Murder Monday with her.
Right. So I said, well, I have this thing that I'm working on starting right now. I'm wanting to start this segment called Murder Monday, where I cover, you know, a true crime story. And if I had somebody like you from Crime Stoppers, that kind of brings in a feel good element, like that we can tell people we're doing this segment to bring attention, you know, to the work that Crime Stoppers does locally to solve unsolved crimes. And so we can end each segment, you know, with the Crime Stoppers phone number and encouraging people to call in if they have information on a murder.
Well, and you thought that you, like, if you were a selfish person, you could have just done it. Like, you could have just done Murder Monday yourself.
Right.
But you were like, I think it will be more compelling to bring somebody else in. And she had a great voice.
She has a great voice.
And she knows true crime.
Yes. And
I mean, she does.
And it made sense for her to come on and kind of tell the story. Like, her and I would, you know, communicate about what the story was going to be that week, the case that she would cover. And then she would, you know, tell my co-host and I what she was going to do and send us, you know, clips and things to add into the story to make it really larger than life. And it was just an incredible segment. She did an incredible job. It blew up. We were getting thousands and thousands and thousands of clicks per month on our radio station website for people to go back and listen to the segment if they didn't hear it live. Other radio stations across the United States started doing Murder Monday in their city. Tampa did it. Minneapolis did it on KDWB. It was a huge thing that these other massive pop radio morning shows started doing because it was such a success in Indianapolis where we were doing it. And it had never, by the way, covering rape and murder in morning drive radio had never been done.
At like 6 a.m.
That's a no-no. And I had to fight with my bosses behind the scenes to do the segment because I knew it would rip in a good way. I knew that it would be a success. And I just said, I am our audience and I know what our audience would like. And I've always bet on myself my entire career and I knew it would do well. Yep. And it did. And Ashley... It was a huge part of that because of her storytelling skills.
Well, and she, right out of the gate, was incredible. Like, first episode, no learning curve, incredible. She was mesmerizing. She grabbed you with the story. She did an incredible job. And then things...
But wait, before you get to that, though... Before we launched Murder Monday also, you know, her and I went out for wine to discuss.
We hung out.
Me and you and her hung out.
We went to dinner.
There's pictures on my Instagram. If you really scroll back and look, there's pictures of me, her, and Ashley Flowers hanging out.
We went to dinner. We went to my favorite murder, like, meetup.
Mm-hmm.
To this day, I'm going to say she's a cool girl.
Yeah.
To hang out with.
Absolutely. And the thing is, though, during our meeting, when I was talking to her about, like, what my vision was for this segment, verbatim, I told her, I want this segment to be different because every other true crime podcast I listen to, I can't stand how they banter for like 10, 15, 20 minutes
before.
Or small talk before. I want them to, you got to get into it. No rabbit holes. That was super important. And
you told her to keep her last name.
And I told her, keep the last name Flowers because it's such incredible, like, this irony that you're doing all these horrible, dark stories and your last name is Flowers. I told her that because she was about to get married like a month later.
And she did. She listened. So Ashley Flowers 100% came up with Crime Junkie on her own, launched it on her own, but she launched it while still doing Murder Monday, which is fine.
Mm-hmm.
But you promoted Crime Junkie on radio.
Well, no, she wanted to, and I said no.
No, you did. The first couple of episodes, you guys let her promote, and then
okay,
and then you were like no, and then that's when it kind of.
Well, and so the falling out part and the part that's aggravating, which I've never talked about, is that in all these interviews, you know, when people ask her, well, how did you start Crime Junkie? She's never once said like,
I was on Murder Monday.
She's talked about being on Murder Monday. She says that she came up with the idea.
Right.
She's never
she
told
said that she came to you with the idea.
Yes.
And which is not true. Not true.
She's never told the story. I'm telling you right now, she has never told the story of this random radio girl finding her in the library and saying, you have a great voice. You should do podcasting or radio.
Right.
And so all of that, like, I would never try to take credit for, and which is why I've never told the story, because I don't want it to come across as if I'm trying to take credit for Crime Junkie, because that's her.
That is her.
She came up with that. She had merch right out the gate. She had amazing branding right out the gate. Everything was so perfect. I had nothing to do with that. All I did, though, was I felt like I encouraged her to do it. And I've never gotten one thank you or shout out, which I just think is BS.
Well, and then she stopped. No massive fallout, but she just completely quit talking to you, which was so weird because you got along so well. So there was like no reason to just unfollowed you on Instagram. Like, that was really weird. And that's, yeah.
Do you think our friendship would have worked if one of us wasn't conservative?
Yes, but I don't think that it would be what it is. And I don't think we would be as close because I, and you don't either. I mean, I don't make my life an echo chamber. So I have very good friends of mine. Some of my friends that I've known forever, I mean, don't believe all the same beliefs as me, and it has no impact on our friendship. And I love those people, and it's great. And I think that, you know, you are pretty open-minded too. You're not going to shun somebody who just because they don't believe the same thing as you. I very much am of the belief, if you treat me well, I will love you.
Which I don't. I only slap you around once in a while.
And so I would never not be somebody's friend because of that. But I don't think we would be as close because we bond over our beliefs about so many things. You know, you and I both are extremely passionate about child sex trafficking. We're passionate about pro-life.
Pop culture.
All of those things, like, and our faith, like, we bond about all of those things. And so I feel like
we have everything in common. I don't think we have anything that's not in common, do we?
I do not like SpongeBob.
She doesn't like SpongeBob. She doesn't like chicken noodle soup. Two things I don't understand, may never forgive and get over.
But, you know, we have all these things that, like, really bring us together. And I think I don't really talk politics with any of my friends because they're not into it. They have beliefs. I'm not saying that, but, like, that's just not their passion. That's not something they're super into. And politics stress me out. You know that. But I'm not in the know. Like, I pay attention to things and I am interested in, like, I can talk to you about that I can't really talk to those other people about. And
you rewatch Bernie Sanders speeches every day.
Every day.
Just joking. She's very conservative.
You know, I can bond with you about those things, and I also can talk to you. I mean, I also have other friends that, like, are into pop culture, but, like, not the way we are. I can talk to you about something that happened in 1985, and you know what I'm talking about, and I can talk to you about something that happened yesterday, and you know what I'm talking about. Like, so I don't think we would be as close.
Do you think we'll be friends forever?
Yeah.
Are we going to be old?
Stuck with me.
I always say that Firefly Lane show reminds me of us, but
so
you get
offensive.
You don't like that. But I say that reminds me of us because of their level of closeness and, like, devotion to each other. Even though one of them is kind of a crappy friend, I don't mean that. I don't think that's like us. I just think their closeness is, and how their families are intertwined and they're always a part of each other's lives and they talk so often. That's what reminds me of us.
Right. But that's the only. She's sleeping with her friend's husband.
Yeah, I'm not doing that. I'm not sleeping with her husband, folks. Okay. Lauren, thank you so much for coming on The Spillover with me. I love you.
Love you.
I think there are people that are supposed to be in our lives through certain seasons and for certain reasons, and sometimes those won't be for very long. The friends you have for a lifetime, though, once you have them, are so special and precious, and they take work from both people to keep that friendship going. This was one of the more conversational episodes of The Spillover, and you got to know a lot about me that maybe you didn't know or maybe you didn't even expect. Lauren and I both are excited to read the 5-star reviews on this episode with your own stories of friendship and what surprised you the most about me based on what Lauren shared today. Do you have a Lauren in your life? It's never too late to find that person, and I really hope that you'll consider coming to YWS this year, because besides Lauren, some of my closest friends to this day are girls that I met at Turning Point conferences. And I'm bringing Lauren to her first YWS this year. I told her that she has to go. I'm prying her away from her brand new twin baby boys. Her husband wasn't very happy, but I told him I will kidnap her myself and bring her if I have to. Sometimes episodes of The Spillover will be more lighthearted and feel good, and sometimes they'll challenge you, shock you, or teach you something. Sometimes it'll be a name that you've heard of, and sometimes it won't. But no matter what, every week, The Spillover features an interview with someone interesting and totally unique. Subscribe to The Spillover on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen, so new episodes will immediately download for you every Thursday at 9 p.m. Pacific and midnight Eastern when they drop. Each episode is also available to watch on YouTube. Just search for Poplitics and subscribe to our YouTube channel. I'm Alex Clark, and this is The Spillover. Love you, mean it. Bye.